Chapter 10. And now they had another broil with the three Englishmen, one of whom, a most turbulent fellow, being in a rage at one of the three captive slaves, because the fellow had not done something right which he bade him do, and seemed a little untractable in his showing him, drew a hatchet out of a frog belt which he wore by his side, and fell upon the poor savage, not to correct him, but to kill him. One of the Spaniards who was by, seeing him give the fellow a barbarous cut with the hatchet, which he aimed at his head, but stuck into his shoulder, so that he thought he had cut the poor creature's arm off, ran to him, and entreating him not to murder the poor man, placed himself between him and the savage, to prevent the mischief. The fellow, being enraged the more at this, struck at the Spaniard with his hatchet, and swore he would serve him as he intended to serve the savage, which the Spaniard perceiving, avoided the blow, and with a shovel, which he had in his hand, for they were all working in the field about their corn land, knocked the brute down. Another of the Englishmen, running up at the same time to help his comrade, knocked the Spaniard down. And then two Spaniards more came in to help their man, and a third Englishman fell in upon them. They had none of them any firearms or any other weapons, but hatchets and other tools, except this third Englishman. He had one of my rusty cutlasses, with which he made at the two last Spaniards, and wounded them both. This fray set the whole family in an uproar, and more help coming in, they took the three Englishmen prisoners. The next question was, what should be done with them? They had been so often mutinous, and were so very furious, so desperate, and so idle withal, they knew not what course to take with them, for they were mischievous to the highest degree, and cared not what hurt they did to any man, so that, in short, it was not safe to live with them. The Spaniard who was governor told them, in so many words, that if they had been of his own country he would have hanged them. For all laws and all governors were to preserve society, and those who were dangerous to the society ought to be expelled out of it. But as they were Englishmen, and that it was to the generous kindness of an Englishman that they all owed their preservation and deliverance, he would use them with all possible lenity, and would leave them to the judgment of the other two Englishmen, who were their countrymen. One of the two honest Englishmen stood up, and said they desired it might not be left to them. For, says he, I am sure we ought to sentence them to the gallows. And with that he gives an account how Will Atkins, one of the three, had proposed to have all the five Englishmen join together, and murder all the Spaniards, when they were in their sleep. When the Spanish governor heard this, he calls to Will Atkins, How, Señor Atkins, would you murder us all? What have you to say to that? The ardent villain was so far from denying it, that he said it was true, and swore they would do it still, before they had done with them. Well, but Señor Atkins, says the Spaniard, what have we done to you, that you will kill us? What would you get by killing us? And what must we do to prevent you killing us? Must we kill you, or you kill us? Why will you put us to the necessity of this, Señor Atkins? Says the Spaniard very calmly, and smiling. Señor Atkins was in such a rage at the Spaniard's making a jest of it, that, had he not been held by three men, and withal had no weapon near him, it was thought he would have attempted to kill the Spaniard in the middle of all the company. This hare-brained carriage obliged them to consider seriously what was to be done. The two Englishmen and the Spaniard who saved the poor savage were of the opinion that they should hang one of the three for an example to the rest, and that particularly it should be he that had twice attempted to commit murder with his hatchet. Indeed, there was some reason to believe he had done it, for the poor savage was in such a miserable condition with the wound he had received, that it was thought he could not live. But the governor Spaniard still said no, it was an Englishman that had saved all their lives, and he would never consent to put an Englishman to death, though he had murdered half of them. Nay, he said if he had been killed himself by an Englishman, and had time left to speak, it should be that they should pardon him. This was so positively insisted on by the governor Spaniard, that there was no gainsaying it. And as merciful counsels are most apt to prevail where they are so earnestly pressed, so they all came into it. But then it was to be considered what should be done to keep them from doing the mischief they designed. For all agreed, governor and all, that means were to be used for preserving the society from danger. After a long debate, it was agreed that they should be disarmed, and not permitted to have either gun, powder, shot, sword, or any weapon, that they should be turned out of the society, and left to live where they would, and how they would, by themselves. But that none of the rest, either Spaniards or English, should hold any kind of converse with them, or have anything to do with them, that they should be forbid to come within a certain distance of the place where the rest dwelt, and if they offered to commit any disorder, so as to spoil, burn, kill, or destroy any of the corn, plantings, buildings, fences, or cattle belonging to the society, they should die without mercy, and they would shoot them, wherever they could find them. The humane governor, musing upon the sentence, considered a little upon it, and turning to the two honest Englishmen, said, "Hold, you must reflect, that it will be long ere they can raise corn and cattle of their own, and they must not starve. We must therefore allow them provisions." So he caused to be added, that they should have a proportion of corn given them to last them 8 months, and proceed to sow, by which time they might be supposed to raise some of their own, that they should have 6 milch goats, 4 he-goats, and 6 kids given them, as well for present subsistence as for a store, and that they should have tools given them for their work in the fields, but they should have none of these tools or provisions, unless they would swear solemnly that they would not hurt or injure any of the Spaniards with them, or of their fellow Englishmen. Thus they dismissed them the society, and turned them out to shift for themselves. They went away sullen and refractory, as neither content to go away nor to stay. But, as there was no remedy, they went, pretending to go and choose a place where they would settle themselves, and some provisions were given them, but no weapons. About 4 or 5 days after, they came again for some victuals, and gave the governor an account where they had pitched their tents, and marked themselves out a habitation and plantation, and it was a very convenient place indeed, on the remotest part of the island, northeast much about the place where I providentially landed in my first voyage, when I was driven out to sea in my foolish attempt to sail round the island. Here they built themselves 2 handsome huts, and contrived them in a manner like my first habitation, being close under the side of a hill, having some trees already growing on 3 sides of it, so that by planting others it would be very easily covered from the sight, unless narrowly searched for. They desired some dried goat skins for beds and covering, which were given them, and upon giving their words that they would not disturb the rest or injure any of their plantations, they gave them hatchets and what other tools they could spare, some peas, barley, and rice for sowing, and, in a word, anything they wanted except arms and ammunition. They lived in this separate condition about 6 months, and had got in their first harvest, though the quantity was but small, the parcel of land they had planted being but little. Indeed, having all their plantation to form, they had a great deal of work upon their hands, and when they came to make boards and pots, and such things, they were quite out of their element, and could make nothing of it. Therefore when the rainy season came on, for want of a cave in the earth, they could not keep their grain dry, and it was in great danger of spoiling. This humbled them much. So they came and begged the Spaniards to help them, which they very readily did, and in 4 days worked a great hole in the side of the hill for them, big enough to secure their corn and other things from the rain. But it was a poor place at best compared to mine, and especially as mine was then, for the Spaniards had greatly enlarged it, and made several new apartments in it. About 3/4 of a year after this separation, a new frolic took these rogues, which, together with the former villainy they had committed, brought mischief enough upon them, and had very near been the ruin of the whole colony. The three new associates began, it seems, to be weary of the laborious life they led, and that without hope of bettering their circumstances. And a whim took them, that they would make a voyage to the continent, from whence the savages came, and would try, if they could seize upon some prisoners among the natives there, and bring them home, so as to make them do the laborious part of the work for them. The project was not so preposterous, if they had gone no further. But they did nothing, and proposed nothing, but had either mischief in the design, or mischief in the event. And if I may give my opinion, they seem to be under a blast from heaven. For if we will not allow a visible curse to pursue visible crimes, how shall we reconcile the events of things with the divine justice? It was certainly an apparent vengeance on their crime of mutiny and piracy that brought them to the state they were in. And they showed not the least remorse for the crime, but added new villainies to it, such as the piece of monstrous cruelty of wounding a poor slave, because he did not, or perhaps could not, understand to do what he was directed, and to wound him in such a manner as made him a cripple all his life, and in a place, where no surgeon or medicine could be, had for his cure, and, what was still worse, the intentional murder, for such to be sure it was, as was afterwards the form designed they all laid to murder the Spaniards in cold blood, and in their sleep. The three fellows came down to the Spaniards one morning, and in very humble terms desired to be admitted to speak with them. The Spaniards very readily heard what they had to say, which was this: that they were tired of living in the manner they did, and that they were not handy enough to make the necessaries they wanted, and that having no help, they found they should be starved. But if the Spaniards would give them leave to take one of the canoes which they came over in, and give them arms and ammunition proportioned to their defense, they would go over to the main, and seek their fortunes, and so deliver them from the trouble of supplying them with any other provisions. The Spaniards were glad enough to get rid of them, but very honestly represented to them the certain destruction they were running into, told them they had suffered such hardships upon that very spot, that they could, without any spirit of prophecy, tell them they would be starved or murdered, and bade them consider of it. The men replied audaciously, they should be starved, if they stayed here, for they could not work, and would not work, and they could, but be starved abroad. And if they were murdered, there was an end of them, they had no wives or children to cry after them, and, in short, insisted importunately upon their demand, declaring they would go, whether they gave them any arms or not. The Spaniards told them, with great kindness, that if they were resolved to go they should not go like naked men, and be in no condition to defend themselves, and that though they could ill spare firearms, not having enough for themselves, yet they would let them have two muskets, a pistol, and a cutlass, and each man a hatchet, which they thought was sufficient for them. In a word, they accepted the offer, and having baked bread enough to serve them a month given them, and as much goat's flesh as they could eat, while it was sweet, with a great basket of dried grapes, a pot of fresh water, and a young kid alive, they boldly set out in the canoe for a voyage over the sea, where it was at least 40 miles broad. The boat, indeed, was a large one, and would very well have carried 15 or 20 men, and therefore was rather too big for them to manage. But as they had a fair breeze and flood tide with them, they did well enough. They had made a mast of a long pole, and a sail of 4 large goatskins dried, which they had sewed or laced together, and away they went merrily together. The Spaniards called after them Bon Voyage, and no man ever thought of seeing them any more. The Spaniards were often saying to one another, and to the two honest Englishmen who remained behind, how quietly and comfortably they lived, now these three turbulent fellows were gone. As for their coming again, that was the remotest thing from their thoughts that could be imagined. When, behold, after 22 days' absence, one of the Englishmen, being abroad upon his planting work, sees three strange men coming towards him at a distance, with guns upon their shoulders. Away runs the Englishman, frightened and amazed, as if he was bewitched, to the governor's Spaniard, and tells him they were all undone, for there were strangers upon the island, but he could not tell who they were. The Spaniard, pausing a while, says to him, "How do you mean you cannot tell who? They are the savages, to be sure." "No, no," says the Englishman, "they are men in clothes, with arms." "Nay then," says the Spaniard, "why are you so concerned? If they are not savages, they must be friends, for there is no Christian nation upon earth, but will do us good rather than harm." While they were debating thus, came up the three Englishmen, and standing without the wood, which was new planted, hallooed to them. They presently knew their voices, and so all the wonder ceased. But now the admiration was turned upon another question, what could be the matter, and what made them come back again. It was not long before they brought the men in, and inquiring where they had been, and what they had been doing, they gave them a full account of their voyage in a few words. That they reached the land in less than 2 days, but finding the people alarmed at their coming, and preparing with bows and arrows to fight them, they durst not go on shore, but sailed on to the northward 6 or 7 hours, till they came to a great opening, by which they perceived that the land they saw from our island was not the main, but an island. That upon entering that opening of the sea they saw another island on the right hand north, and several more west, and being resolved to land somewhere, they put over to one of the islands which lay west, and went boldly on shore, that they found the people very courteous and friendly to them, and they gave them several roots and some dried fish, and appeared very sociable, and that the women, as well as the men, were very forward to supply them with anything they could get for them to eat, and brought it to them a great way, on their heads. They continued here for 4 days, and inquired as well as they could of them by signs, what nations were this way, and that way, and were told of several fierce and terrible people, that lived almost every way, who, as they made known by signs to them, used to eat men. But, as for themselves, they said they never ate men or women, except only such as they took in the wars, and then they owned they made a great feast, and ate their prisoners. The Englishmen inquired when they had had a feast of that kind, and they told them about 2 moons ago, pointing to the moon, and to 2 fingers, and that their great king had 200 prisoners now, which he had taken in his war, and they were feeding them to make them fat for the next feast. The Englishmen seemed mighty desirous of seeing those prisoners, but the others, mistaking them, thought they were desirous to have some of them to carry away for their own eating. So they beckoned to them, pointing to the setting of the sun, and then to the rising, which was to signify that the next morning at sun rising they would bring some for them. And accordingly the next morning they brought down 5 women and 11 men, and gave them to the Englishmen, to carry with them on their voyage, just as we would bring so many cows and oxen down to a seaport town to victual a ship. As brutish and barbarous as these fellows were at home, their stomachs turned at this sight, and they did not know what to do. To refuse the prisoners would have been the highest affront to the savage gentry that could be offered them, and what to do with them they knew not. However, after some debate, they resolved to accept of them. And, in return, they gave the savages that brought them one of their hatchets, an old key, a knife, and 6 or 7 of their bullets, which, though they did not understand their use, they seemed particularly pleased with. And then tying the poor creatures' hands behind them, they dragged the prisoners into the boat for our men. The Englishmen were obliged to come away as soon as they had them, or else they that gave them this noble present would certainly have. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.